Mark Jackson has joined us here on Sports Byline USA, the head coach of the Golden State Warriors, 17 seasons in the league, and as I pointed out before, seven of those 17 played with the New York Knicks. You know, everybody always points to the major markets, and that mecca for basketball, I think it can be said, it is New York. What makes it so special being in a Knicks uniform and playing there? I mean, from a fan standpoint, from a media standpoint, just from a basketball standpoint, Mark?
Well, it really is the best arena in the world. You know, it's known as the world's most famous arena, and there's a reason why. And it's not just because of the basketball. It's the history that has taken place in that building. When you talk about, you know, losing a champ just recently in Joe Frazier, the beautiful left hook that he, you know, hit Muhammad Ali with in Madison Square Garden. When you talk about the battles between, you know, the Lakers and the Knicks, Willis Reed and Wilt Chamberlain, Wes and Frazier, when you talk about Earl Monroe, you're talking about all-time greats, whether it be opponents coming into the building, Michael Jordan or Larry Bird or Magic Johnson, or even the great hockey matchups with Gretzky and Messier. No matter what, each sport and each arena, the great performers, the Frank Sinatras, the Michael Jacksons, you name them, they've been on the greatest stage, and that's Madison Square Garden. And when you think about the lights being on and 20,000 people sitting in there, you realize immediately the history that has taken place in that building, and it really gives you chills.
You mentioned about Rick Pitino being the best coach you ever played for. What made him so?
Well, to me, I was a young guy that was drafted by the Knicks, number 18, and I could have gone somewhere where the coach did not hand me the basketball. I had two guys older than me, veterans, in Gerald Henderson and Rory Sparrow, very accomplished point guards that could have held the fort down. But Rick Pitino is a guy that said, I'm giving you the basketball, and I'm going to allow you to make mistakes, and I'm going to trust that you're going to get the job done. And what that did is it propelled me to play 17 years. If I had gone to another coach, then I don't know if I would have played 17 years, but that really gave birth to something. And he convinced me what coaches are supposed to do, instill in their players a confidence level where they begin to believe that they're the best on the floor. And he had me fooled into believing that whether it was Magic Johnson, Isaiah Thomas, John Stockton, anybody else on the other side of the court, Rick Pitino was so effective as a coach and a motivator that he had me believing that I was the best point guard on the floor, no matter who was on the other side of the court. And it really helped my game.
In addition to Rick Pitino, you also played for five Hall of Fame coaches, Mark: Lou Carnesecca, Pat Riley, Larry Brown, Lenny Wilkins, and Jerry Sloan. And you once said, I learned a lot throughout my career from playing for great minds, and I didn't just play for them, I stole from them. What was the commonality that all of those great coaches had?
Well, to me, they were all leaders. They did a great job of leading their teams, whether it be through great times or when we faced adversity. And I think ultimately that's what coaches are supposed to do, because you're talking about playing 82 games a season. There's going to be long nights. There's going to be tough nights. But you got to make sure that your team stays the course. And you only do that by leading by example. And I think the ultimate thing is you can't be the only one with the microphone. At times you got to allow the coaches that coach alongside of you and the players that's in the battles with you to have an opinion. And your job as a coach is to listen and then ultimately make the right decision. But all of those coaches were player coaches and were coaches that instilled a lot of confidence in their team, and they were very prepared.
Let me switch gears and talk to you about the great players you played with or against in the NBA. And I want to get your response to this. And that is, you played with Chris Mullin, you played with Patrick Ewing, Charles Oakley, Reggie Miller, John Stockton. And I've often observed that among the truly great players in any sport, but we're talking basketball here, that when the game is on the line, they want to be the ones to determine the outcome. They also understand the game well enough that they know what they have to do from moment to moment in order to help the team win that game. And also, they make players around them better than they actually are. Am I correct about that observation? And the players that I mentioned, tell me about the ones and how they did it and how you did it.
Well, you hit the nail right on the head as far as if you want to be great, you've got to make a decision that you're going to be unselfish enough to read when to take over the game individually and when to make a difference as far as impacting other guys around you. Because when you talk about getting to that next level, teams are going to force you to make a play. Your job as a great player is to be a playmaker. That's reading the defense, and that some nights means taking shots yourself, and other nights is going to mean being a willing passer, getting rid of the basketball. And when you talk about the guys that you talked about, especially Mullen, Miller, and Ewing, three guys that are very dear to my heart, incredible basketball players, and Reggie Miller will be a Hall of Famer, but three guys that will be in the Hall of Fame, incredible people, great, great warriors as far as knowledge, understanding, and competing, and unselfish basketball players. And then when you talk about Stockton, Malone, obviously the success that they had in Utah in that great system and the 1-2 punch that they were for so many years. But great players are unselfish, and they're willing to do whatever it takes on the court.
You know, another thing, too, and I left Michael Jordan off that list, not for a particular reason, but I wanted to ask you about something that he personally told me one time as well. He said, "Ron, when the game is on the line, I want to be the one to determine the outcome. If I succeed, I want the glory. If I fail, I'll take the blame." Not everybody is comfortable with taking blame. They like mediocrity more than anything else. What drives that special player like a Michael Jordan or anybody else to be willing to accept failure?
I think basically the competitive nature, the willingness to want to win so bad that they put so much time into it, more than anybody else, to the point where they refuse to allow a win or a loss to be determined by somebody that did not have as much invested in the outcome as they did. When you think about Michael Jordan, to me the greatest play is not, you know, hitting a foul line jump over Craig Elo, or crossing over Byron Russell and knocking down the jumper, or dunking on Patrick Ewing and Charles Oakley and John Starks. So, you know, to me, the best play is when he came out of the huddle, read the defense, and found Steve Kerr wide open by himself. That showed a level of maturity. That showed a willingness to share the spotlight and a passion and a commitment to want to make the right play. If it's the right play, then you make it. And he certainly did that, and that's why, you know, he'll go down as the best.
Mark, I also think it's probably because of the fact that the great players like Michael and others that look at playing the game and either making the shot or not making the shot that wins the game do not see it as failure. They see it as a learning experience that they can apply to the next time out. Am I correct about that observation?
Well, you're right about that, and I think what they see it as the right play. You know, in this league, when you're talking about playing against the best in the world, you're going to face adversity. You're going to get losses. What you want to make sure you do is make the right play, make the right read, and then you're able to sleep at night and live with the results. If Steve Kerr misses that shot, guess what? Michael Jordan shouldn't go home saying, "I should have shot the basketball." He should go home saying, "You know what? I made the right play. I put my team in position to win. Next time I'm going to do the same thing again," and he's going to knock that shot down. But you live with it when you make the right reads and the right decisions.
You're an interesting person off the court as well. And the one thing I think that makes you happy and also so successful, as you were in basketball, is that you've got great balance in your life. And one of the things that is important in your life is the fact that you're an ordained minister with a church down in Southern California. And I loved a quote that you said one time. You said, "These people don't care," referring to the people in your church. "They don't care about anything I've done or will do in basketball. They'd kill for me because of what I've done at this church the past 2 years." Tell me about how that has brought balance to your life.
Well, it's been incredible. I've been ordained minister over 13 years now. And my wife and I, a little less than 3 years ago, decided to start a church in Van Nuys, California. The name of it is True Love Worship Center International. It's incredible. We have a membership, a congregation of about a little over 300 people, and we're growing. It's just been a great blessing. And week in and week out, you look out into the congregation and you realize how the people have grown, how you've impacted lives, and how God has used my wife and I in this ministry to really impact lives, change lives, and really make a difference as far as the generations are concerned through our families. I'm looking at kids grow up. I'm looking at a congregation that we have. We got about four kids playing Division I basketball at major schools right now, And this is all from our congregation, but impacting lives and quality people. I tell you what, it means more to me than anything else. You can have basketball and all those other things. When you're talking about changing people and allowing people to have peace, joy, and the love of God in their lives, there's nothing more important.
You know, you also said after you got the job as the head coach of the Golden State Warriors, you said there are times when I'm going to be a coach, a friend, a dad, a pastor, a listener, a helper, a guide. When you're talking about coaching, you're talking about someone who has a responsibility to impact players on the floor. But I truly believe that you're also talking about someone who has the responsibility to impact players off the floor. Can you do both of those things successfully?
Well, I really believe so, and not just believe it, I live it. If I couldn't do it, there'd be no reason for me to accept the job as the head coach of the Golden State Warriors. I didn't come there to try to change guys just to make them better basketball players. I think it's important to make them better husbands, better fathers, better leaders, better in the community, better grandfathers one day, better sons, better believers. It's important to me to change. I think the thing you look at, you have an option to be a thermometer or a thermostat. One of them is dictated by the environment. The other one dictates the temperature of the room. And I look forward to raising guys that are thermostats in their communities and in their households.
Yeah, the other thing you said about the Golden State Warriors is we're going to be an up-tempo basketball team, but first and foremost, we're going to be a defensive-minded team. I've always found that being defensive starts with the state of mind. Am I correct about that? And how does one establish that in players when the game is so oriented to being offensive?
Well, you establish it by holding guys accountable, by preaching it and practicing it every single day, by making it a commitment, by saying from day one, this is who we are, this is our identity, and we're not going to accept or tolerate anything short of it. That does not mean that every single night we're going to lock down the opposition. That does not mean that an individual is not going to have a big night on us. We're playing against the best in the world, so we're going to have tough nights, but we're not going to accept not giving energy, effort, and playing with passion, paying attention to detail, night in and night out. And if you don't do it, then you're not going to play. And no longer will you be able to do whatever you want on one end of the floor and still play the game of basketball. We are going to raise the standards, expect excellence, and that's why we can go out and say we will be successful.
We only have a couple of minutes left, but Joe Lacob, one of the co-owners of the team, said when you were hired, we're convinced that he is the right person to guide this team into the future and help us achieve the success that we're striving for as an organization. I'm sure you were looking for your first head coaching opportunity. What were the elements that you were looking for, and what did you find in the Warriors that satisfied you?
Well, I've interviewed plenty of times for head coaching jobs, and off the top of my head, I was a finalist probably three or four times. The moment I met Joe Lacob, I knew right away that this was the job for me. His passion, his commitment, his willingness to do whatever it took to win, right away, in 5 minutes of meeting him, it was like love at first sight. And I didn't know until afterwards that he felt the same exact way. But I knew that this was the job for me. I'd be quite honest with you, if other jobs were offered to me, I probably would not have taken them. But right away, this keeps me close to my home, keeps me close to my family, keeps me close to my church home, great fan base, a great organization with incredible talent, and great owners that's willing to do whatever it takes. So it was an ideal situation for me, and I'm so excited about what the future holds.
Mark, in about 20 seconds, when you think back on your career playing and now heading into coaching and everything, is there a moment that's crystallized in your mind?
To me, probably just the day I got drafted and then winning Rookie of the Year. For me, it's a dream come true. And when I look back and say I was able to do it, I was able to accomplish it, 17 years in the league, with still all the same question marks that people had before I even started in the league, nothing but God's hand all over my life, and I continue to try to allow him to order my steps. I'm humbled and honored to be where I am today. So it's really no one thing other than the fact that I continue to beat the odds, but it's not me. It's the Christ that lives in me.
Mark, thank you very much. I look forward to our getting together again. Come back again and visit us on Sports Byline.
I look forward to it. Thank you so much again.
Mark Jackson, the fine point guard for 17 years in the league and now the head coach of the Golden State Warriors. We continue with more of you and America's Sports Talk Show.